Hello, and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and I have a returning guest back from episode 28 from the wonderful land of Oz. It's art droid Mark Sexton. Mark, welcome back to the book club.
Hello, Eamon, and hello, everybody from the Sydney Melbourne Conurb. It's magnificent here. Hang on. No, it's not. It's dark. It's really quite dark. I'm going to have another red wine. Cheers.
So it's early Sunday morning here. It's Sunday evening there for you. But we've got round the sort of time differences. Last time we had you on talking, of course, about Charlie's War in the pub in London when you were over for the 40th. This time we drift away from 2000 AD origin stories and I ask you about any recent acquisitions, anything that sort of lit the fire recently that's looking good on your shelves, Mark?
I've been really bloody busy, actually, so I haven't bought too much. And besides, my wife's watching me all the time because we're refurbishing a house. So she notices when things come off the credit card. But the last thing I got was current Matt Smith's Red Mosquito Tales of Dead World novel or novella, which I had a quick flick of. That was not too bad. The man can write.
Good, because we've just done The Fall of Dead World, the first hardback from the comic on the podcast. I haven't picked up the Red Mosquito bit yet, but it's pretty good, is it?
It's not too bad. I mean, you know, it sits on its own. It's trying to set up, I think what Matt's doing is he's trying to set up the mechanics of the programs that Dead World's Justice Department use to lay waste to all life on the world. So it's an interesting exercise in trying to figure out the mechanics of how someone would do that, and then putting that kind of like hard-boiled kind of criminal aspect over the top for your main protagonist of the story. It's not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Okay, excellent. The other thing is, of course, since we last spoke a couple of years ago, we were talking about...
Was it a couple of years ago?
It is, yes. We were talking about the Titan hardbacks of Charlie's War.
And of course,
you know, the Treasury of British Comics has now brought out three softback editions of Charlie's War. The art's been restored. The lettering, I think, has been cleaned up. Got lovely new cover images and so on. Did you have a chance to get any of those?
I did. In fact, I'm looking at them right now. I'm picking one up off the shelf and having a quick momentary lovely flick through and just going, yep, they did do such a good job. Really did a good job. I mean, it would have been lovely to have a bit of the colour in there. Here we go. There is colour. So there you go. Shows what I know. It's beautiful reproduction. And I admit, I bought them and I haven't had a chance to read them all again. So I'm looking forward to having a weekend off where I can actually do that. Enjoying the job they did with the lettering particularly. It's actually a change, I think, that actually worked really well to make the... It's interesting how it stops the comic from feeling really quite dated. It's a subtle change in some ways, but it works really well. So I've done it very sensitively. It's a really good job those guys have done.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic work by the Treasury and all their reprographic droids and so on to actually, you know, tidy these up and produce such stunning volumes. And I was interested to note, I mean, I gather, you know, Uncle Pat Mills was very pleased with the new editions, because one thing that struck me from what he was saying, I think we were quite taken by the artistic design of the Titan front covers with the sort of stark black and white and the poppies. But of course, Pat, I think, felt they were a bit too much playing into that sort of, I'm not quite sure what the phrase would be, that sort of like nostalgic fond look back to times of war, which of course was not the intent of Charlie's War at all. So I think he's much more pleased with the current editions than the Titan ones.
Yeah, I mean, they're presented much more as a boy's own adventure package, I suppose you could say. It's a funny one. I mean, yeah, the old Titan books, I still really like the designs they've done, but it is slightly dealing in that glorification of past events and, you know, the noble soldiers going off to war and the magnificent things they managed to achieve in the name of country and nationalism, all sort of stuff. I know where Pat's coming from. I get what he means. I still like him, I suppose. But hey, Treasury business, you know, British comics, hey, they're beautiful. So
they are indeed beautiful volumes. And yes, it was interesting to hear Pat talking about them, you know. And we, as I say, we talked about one of the sort of like pinnacles of black and white British comics, which sort of brings us to today's book. Tell us the book that's finally come up on the book club. What have you picked for us, Mark?
Ooh, well, with no small amount of fondness, I have to say that we are going to do The Dead Man, which I can't believe hasn't been done before. What's wrong with you people? You're all crazy.
So this is The Dead Man. I have got the 1991 Titan edition with the Sean Phillips cover. Which edition have you got in front of you?
I do have the Rebellion, sticking with that, the Rebellion one, which, when was that published? No idea. But anyway, published 2009, apparently.
Oh, right.
Really? Okay. So, yes, got that one. It's been sitting up on the bookshelves in the attic for some time, so I hauled it down. Has had a few lovely reads of it. It's, once again, a very, very, very nice little volume. And, small volume, not a huge amount of pages.
No, it's not. It is a slim volume. Let's do the statistics and the credits. This is John Wagner writing as Keith Ripley. John Ridgway is the artist, lettered by Jack Potter, editor Richard Burton, appeared in Prog 650 to 662 from October 89 to January 1990. And it is a huge turning point. And I guess what I should do for the last time on this podcast is give out the final Dead Man spoiler warning. If by any chance you haven't read The Dead Man from 2000 AD, and you don't know what we're going to be talking about, then please stop what you're doing, get a hold of the book and read it. It's a fairly, as you say, slim volume. It's not a huge read. And then come back, because we're going to be talking about one of the biggest spoilers in 2000 AD history, I guess, Mark.
Yes, and I also have to say that if you have been reading the Judge Dredd collections, and at some point you saw this weird little blip where suddenly Fred was suddenly looking very, very, very different and wearing a cowboy suit, you would be quite confused, and for very good reasons, because you've misridden The Dead Man, which is frustratingly, but also understandably, not part of the Dredd collections. So just to really screw with people's minds.
So tell us, Mark, your particular own relationship with this book, and particularly when you first encountered it, when you first read it.
Yes. Okay. This is when I was reading the Prog. I think last time we talked about origin stories, I think I said I didn't get to read 2000 AD. I didn't encounter 2000 AD at all. Very late 85 or very early 86 when I went to boarding school in Adelaide. So I had not had the money or the time to go and find back issues of 2000 AD, so I hadn't read much of the past history of Dredd before reading The Dead Man. And so reading The Dead Man in the Prog and trying to figure out why this slightly odd story
it was clearly set in the world of Judge Dredd, because we're talking, you get the idea fairly quickly that it's the cursed earth. Why we had this story happening in the world of Dredd, which was totally unconnected to the tale of Judge Dredd, and reading that and look at the beautiful art by John Ridgway, and just going, who's this Keith Ripley? He sounds like a dodgy character. And along reading it on a weekly basis, and then you get to the end of episode 10 and you go, oh my God. Now, it worked really well for me, the big twist, which we haven't actually said what the twist is yet. It worked really well for me because I didn't know that there was a certain thing that had happened to the main character back in his past. I suppose we should probably say what the twist is, shouldn't we?
Okay, so here it comes, people.
Okay.
last warning.
Yeah. Close your ears. Block them. Unless you don't want to. So we discover in this beautifully, beautifully timed, beautifully modulated tale by John Wagner, we discover that the dead man, who's this character we've discovered in the middle of the Cursed Earth, who essentially comes back from the dead, he's scarred, he's burnt, and he has no memory of who he is. He slowly discovers through the story that he's exceptionally good at gunplay. He's covered in old bullet wounds, some of that. We discover as he goes and tries to find out what his identity is, we discover that he is, in fact, Judge Dredd, and that he's taken the Long Walk, which had not happened in the current Dredd tale before then. So that was a big, massive, massive twist that I don't think anybody was expecting to see. But for those clever folks who were out there who knew their Dredd history, there was a few little teasers hidden within the artwork to let us know, give us little hints as to what was going on. And I think those people nodding sagely going, yes, he's square pupils on the dead man.
And indeed, course, yes.
Yes. And I didn't know because I hadn't read these old Dredd stories. I'd never read Tale of the City of the Damned. So at that stage, I didn't know that Dredd had lost his eyes. I had no idea he had mechanical eyes, replacements. So that was completely lost on me. So for me, it was the perfect giant twist. Worked exceptionally well.
So we're going to come back to that twist in a moment when we talk about the writing. Let's start with art first this time. So let's talk about John Ridgway and the black and white artwork of The Dead Man. Now, he's come up quite recently on the podcast because of his stories that he did in Pat Mills' Diceman comic. And the Luke Kirby's Summer Magic stories will hopefully be coming up on the podcast, I think, next year. He was... You know, he's also done a lot of work, I think, on Doctor Who comics. But interestingly, I note from Dave Thorpe's introduction in my edition that he wasn't particularly well known as a Judge Dredd artist. And therefore, in a way, it was a perfect choice for this strip, which was, you know, obviously intended to begin with to misdirect the readers that this, you know, although it occurred in Dredd's world, it was nothing to do with Dredd himself.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the black and white art and, you know, the impact it had on you, particularly as an artist yourself.
Well, I think not having read a colossal amount of British comics at that stage, apart from 2000 AD, I hadn't encountered John's artwork except in 2000 AD. And I seem to recall he'd done Summer Magic before then. He'd done, from memory, one Dredd story. And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that the one where they introduced colour, full-painted colour to Dredd for the first time?
Oh, right.
The Raggedy Man story.
Yes.
I think it was, where they bring in colour. And I think, from memory, John did that story, which was the only story I can remember that he'd done before. And I think I could be completely bloody wrong, in which case I'm going to get shot. So I remember looking at the artwork that he'd done there and just going, oh, Salvage Way is doing another story in 2000 AD. And John's got this beautifully evocative style. It's wonderfully controlled, but it's scratchy at the same time. So it's this wonderful, wonderful, busy, illustrative, scratchy style of heavy blacks, beautiful cross, scribbly cross hatching, and also, you know, Dunham is drawing reasonably photorealistically in that particular style. So he's not cartooning his world. He's trying to draw it quite realistically as much as he possibly can. And it just really works so well. But it's interesting because it's not very, he doesn't draw in a very cinematic way. He draws in a beautifully, beautifully comic book, old-fashioned comic book way, which also works incredibly beautifully and particularly well for this particular story of the Dead Man. And his artwork just evoked this magnificent mood, which was very unlike anything that you'd seen in the Dread world before that. Really made this, and it's interesting. It really the story feels quite like I was trying to think of a way to describe it. It feels a little bit like a Hammer horror film mixed with Deliverance, perhaps.
Yes.
is probably the best way I can describe it. It's got quite a different feel to Dread stories, and you know, other than the Hell Trickers, we hadn't seen anything like it beforehand, and it just evoked a fantastic mood and a fantastically threatening feeling that really supported the writing of this mysterious Keith Ripley, who we'll discover later as Mr. Wagner. So anyway, I'm ready.
No, it's fantastic stuff. I'm looking at the very first page from the very first issue. And you've got young Yasser and his friend Fuzz are out hunting in this sort of the cursed earth. And the first panel where the sun is sort of burning through a rad cloud or something like that. And you've got this desolate, scorched earth landscape. Obviously, you mentioned Hammer horrors and sort of universal horrors, black and white. There's also certain Western themes in the Dead Man, with his broad-brimmed hat and his long duster coat. But, you know, the John Ridgway's sort of work just on that first page is glorious. And as it goes on, I think as everybody knows by this point, the Dead Man's face is obviously etched by terrible acid burns. Mm. And so the scarring, the burns, the grim, almost skeletal look to the Dead Man's face, all beautifully rendered by John Ridgway in this glorious black and white. I guess there was just the one colour page right at the end.
Yes.
Which in my copy has actually been reproduced, unfortunately, in black and white. Is the Rebellion one, does it have that page in colour?
It does indeed. Yes, we were having a little bit of chat about that earlier. So, yes, it is in colour. As is the first episode, it also has the first episode of the following Dread story that sets up what's happening back in Mega City 1 and how Dread came to be on the Long Walk. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
The Tale of the Dead Man, yes. We'll come to that as well. So, again, from the introduction I'm reading by Dave Thorpe, from January 1991, it does mention that John Ridgway was also partially enticed to write this series by the prospect of actually getting to be the artist that draws Dredd's face in full. But, of course, it's a face that is completely obscured by burn and scar tissue. And, of course, those memorable square eyes.
Yes. Those who were paying attention may have got that one.
But, I get even, super fans and Pete Wells on this podcast has said that he didn't catch up on that, on the square eyes. So he was deceived as well in the opening chapters of The Dead Man. So it's glorious stuff. I think one of the great things about an anthology comic like 2000 AD is it can encompass so many different styles. You know, you get something so beautiful and clean and clear-cut like Bolland's early work on the Dreads, or maybe Ron Smith, and then you can have artists like Mick McMahon and, of course, here, John Ridgway, whose style is gloriously scratches, as you said, in a way, but so beautifully done. The landscapes, but also the blacks and whites on the pages, you know, these big blocks of night when the dead man and Yasser sort of go out on their journey of discovery, and there's haunted sort of forests and so on, or rad forests. It's great stuff all around. No,
beautifully done. Beautifully done. I miss John. I wish he was still doing it.
Yes. I mean, it is just glorious stuff. And, you know, we do love a black and white comic, traditionally in British comics. And a bit, like you say, like a black and white horror film. It's got that feel to it, mixed with this cursed earth Western story of the dead man who turns out, you know, he's the mysterious man with no name. He doesn't remember who he is. He's clearly been through some terrible ordeal. But as you say, he's handy with a gun. There's evidence of all sorts of previous sort of scars and gun wounds, bullet wounds all over him from past battles. And then, of course, he puts on the long coat, he puts on the broad-brimmed hat, he picks up the rifle, and he and Yasser and the dog set out to retrace his steps and try and discover who he is. So it's fantastic stuff, isn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful stuff. Yes, if I could draw like that, I'd be a happy, happy, happy camper.
So let's talk about John Wagner. And as I say, is this the biggest twist in 2000 AD or possibly even British comics history, do you think, Mark?
Having not the best grasp of the whole of British comics history, I'd have to say from my experience of what I've had so far, that was the one that definitely got me the most. I think John just managed to tell that story in such a beautifully controlled fashion, but somehow at the same time, he laid all the groundwork, and so when it happened, you weren't completely so thrown by this sudden revelation that Dredd had gone on the long walk. All the groundwork had been laid, so you went, that wouldn't happen. You went, oh my God, Dredd's gone on the long walk. And I understand why he would have done it, because of all the sort of stuff that's happened in the past, you know, with the democracy stories, you know, the question was a case, question of judgment, or the story that was about Fred talking to Morph and the tight boots. All these tales that he put into the past to feed all this in, but then he does it, but he's not let you know that it's happened until this big twist. He just... I don't think I've come across anything that was as well controlled and as well told a massive character twist, a massive character moment as that.
And it's probably something that an anthology comic, again, can do, is that you can have a strip run in parallel to the main Judge Dredd strip. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not clear at first what the connection is to Dredd's world. Mm-hmm. Other than the fact that it obviously, you know, it happens in the cursed earth. And as you say, the sort of masterminds behind all this, John Wagner himself, obviously John Ridgway and art, but Richard Burton as editor as well. Because this had been building up for a while. And in terms of Dredd's chronology, the events of the dead man, which we're reading here, I guess take place during the opening chapters of Necropolis itself. So back in Megacity 1, Necropolis is happening. But of course, in the pages of the prog at the time, Dredd was just seemingly carrying on as normal, having sort of normal weekly adventures.
Sure.
But Burton and Wagner had obviously been, as you say, orchestrating this for some time, and John picking up on, you know, themes that he'd been tapping away at for years in a way. I just think it's marvellous the way they did it. The fact that this just launched and, you know, you've got this anonymous Keith Ripley as the writer. And, you know, it's a slow tale that takes its time. There are, you know, there's several episodes of them just travelling through country, bumping into the grunts from time to time, memorably. There's this growing sense, I suppose, of menace and unease with these nightmares that are curdling the landscape. You know, people are having these terrible dreams. There's clearly something is unpleasant is happening, and yes, the dead man himself keeps waking up screaming from, you know, the terrors that he's witnessed, but we don't know what they are just yet. And as I say, you know, in the pages of the prog, Judge Dredd was dealing with, I think, Cadet Giant in one of the stories. Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed to be business as usual for Judge Dredd, because, of course, the way the prog tells this story, we go from the dead man to the tale of the dead man and then on to Necropolis. So masterful work by John Wagner, and the timing of it all from Richard Burton. I think it's just, you know, in terms of pulling off a coup like this, just beautifully done.
Oh, stunning, stunningly done. Would have been an absolute, it would have been so hard to pull off. And I'm really trying hard to think of anything that's been done like that since that just feels so earned. I mean, you know, the only other big twist I can really think of that worked in the Dredd world like this, I guess, was Trifecta.
Yes.
I think, but yes. Trifecta was a different beast. You know, that was, oh my God, these three stories are linked and they're all happening concurrently and they're all interlinked. But this was something else instead. And this was such a self-assured little story that became this colossal thing because of its ramifications. And so, yeah, I mean, Mr. Wagner knows what he's doing. Sorry, Mr. Keith Ripley knows what he's doing.
Yeah, the fantastic 2000 AD Keith Ripley. Yes, and of course, as we say, you know, John had been thinking about stuff to do with Dredd for some time. I think there were rumours in the prog that, you know, a major character was going to die. And of course, we know from various conversations and interviews over the years that John has always sort of toyed with the idea of whether he would kill off Dredd. I think at the time, some of his early thoughts here were about replacing Dredd with a younger, slightly less grim model, which, you know, you can sort of see happening with the Kraken storyline and so on. But yeah, I mean, how on earth they pulled this off? I guess it would have been perhaps trickier in the current age when internet forums would have been straight on the case and trying to figure it out. But at the time, to, you know, pull off this wonderful sensation of a reveal in a strip running parallel to the Judge Dredd stories. I noted, I was looking through the progs themselves, and there was no mention of the dead man in the letters pages at all up until the reveal prog, which happened in prog 660, when somebody speculated that the dead man's true identity was going to be former Chief Judge Magruder.
Yeah.
But they presumably, if the, what letters they were getting about the dead man, they kept out of the letters page just to help build the mystery as well.
Yeah. I think, so we had to be very, very careful. I'd love to know if anyone actually had tweeted and written in about it, because I bet they would never have published those letters. But,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to the strength of an anthology like 2000 AD that this sort of story works so well. I keep on thinking about how you would do this in an American style comic, and you don't have the brevity. It's weird. The dead man story feels like a small story, but there's something a little bit familiar about it. You know what I mean? It feels like there's something. You can't quite put your finger on what it is that you know there's something going on. There's something about the menace of what's haunting them. You know it's otherworldly. You know it's the cursed earth, because the cursed earth gets mentioned.
It's the atmosphere of dread and nightmare that's creeping up on the story.
Yeah, and you know it's otherworldly, and you know there's something haunting and following, and you know that's trying to find the dead man. But the fact that it has such a different flavour to Dread stories, and it really does. There's no Dread story like it. And that's why I call it Hammer Horror crossed with Deliverance.
Yes.
As you say, with the Western. Because it really does have that feeling of this creeping dread, which is really, it's slightly safe horror. You know, it's not, it's cerebral horror. It's making you feel uncomfortable without showing gross, horrible things. I mean, you obviously see aspects of the thing that's haunting at some point, and you know, she appears as a beautiful woman, and she appears as a wizened, you know, rotting body and stuff like that. But it's not delivered in a way which is gross. It's cleverly done. But then you forget about that because then you're dealing with the grunts, who are the band that you deal with in these several episodes that take up the middle part of the story. It's just beautifully done, but you really, I don't think you could tell the story in this way in the American strip, because you've just got too much real estate within an American book. You know, 22 pages, you wouldn't, there'd be so much fluff in it that the story would become much less intense. And I think that's what's so good about the anthology series, like, you know, Dread in 2003 or The Dead Man, you can tell very intense parcels of story which then stick with you because they just work so intensely, and you can't, it's very hard to do that when you've got 22 pages. So I think, all strength, it was a real strength of the story that had been in anthology.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just thinking of the sort of almost endless clone saga in the Spider-Man comic when they at least did pull off the suggestion that, you know, the character you've been reading for years might actually be the clone for a while, if I remember correctly. I know that gets more and more complicated, the clone saga, as it goes on, but that's possibly it. But yeah, the wonderful anthology comic, it's a wonderful horror comic we're reading. Let's talk a little bit about some of the bad guys. We'll talk at the minor bad guys, because they literally enter Grunt Country, as it's known, where these sort of, I guess, mutant hunters, cannibalistic killers, are hunting the dead man and Yasser and the dog, and of course do in fact capture them all at various points. So, and that's, you know, very memorable. The scenes of them basically tying up Yasser, and they're about to disembowel him. Yes, quite gruesomely.
That's one of those moments you just go, oh crap! You know,
yeah,
it's a horribly, horribly nasty little moment. Very, very, very John, but at the same time, more extreme than we've generally seen, the implication of what's going to happen, and just the expression on their faces at that page. You're not looking at Yasser's face, you're looking at close up to his eyes, interspersed with what they're about to do with the knife. And there's just this one grunt who's sitting there holding a helmet that is going to catch the blood and the guts as they spill out of his stomach cavity as he's cut open. And it just, it's just gross, but in such a beautifully realised way.
It is. It's like a moment of awful folk horror in this story. And what saves Yasser in that situation, strange enough, is not the dead man, Dread. It is, in fact, the appearance of the ghostly apparition that's sort of been haunting this story.
The terror.
We've seen her at several times, and that she terrifies the grunts away as well. Because I think we can say, Mark, that this book features probably, I guess, is it the first appearance of the Sisters of Death?
It is. Yes, I don't think they had, I don't think we actually even had any hint that they previously existed before this.
Yeah.
So that was the second reveal. So, you know, you've got the double whammy. You've got the, that was what's so great about it. The reveals kept coming once you find a big one, which is, holy crap, you know, it's Dread. And then the second reveal is, holy crap, it's the Dark Judges.
And then, you know, once you know that, you just go, the mind spills over. As I remember doing when I read this for the first time, the front was like, it's the dark, it's dark judges, but it's not the ones we know. Holy crap, what does that mean? You know, what's happening back in Mega City 1? And then, of course, that's enunciated by Dredd himself, that you have to wait for, God, how, you know, quite a long time before you actually find out what's actually happening. Because we've got to go through the whole, you know, the whole Tale of Deadman strip and the whole Kraken, and the whole lead up to Kraken Saga.
So, in episode 12 of The Deadman, when Dredd gets to recount what actually did happen to him, we do get these memorable two full page images of Sister Nausea and Sister Phobia. Last time they were on the podcast, I think I called them the Dark Sisters, and I was corrected quite rightly by Ian Hollingsworth. They are the Sisters of Death. But those two page spreads,
yes,
are just, they are some of the most gruesome things in this book. Breaking out of the borders of the panel in one case, and it's just they're gloriously gruesome. It's another great 2000 AD couple of pages, isn't it?
And it's interesting because, you know, they're more complex designs than, you know, Brian Bolan did with the Four Dark Judges, but they do sit in the same universe, but they're even more gross. But they still work beautifully, effectively. I mean, they're not. My only critique of this is they're not quite as strong as Brian's designs for the Four Dark Judges. But they are for that. They are for all that quite unforgettable. Probably the most disgusting thing.
Yes, they are. The most disgusting thing you'll see in this particular book is the hideous images of the two Sisters of Death. Although, as you said, the possibility that, you know, you were going to see a child gutted on the page was also terrifically gruesome as well. So let's pull back from part 12 to part 11, which I think I'm right. That's in Prog 660. And, of course, the dead man has been finding little bits of uniform, a knee pad, a ruined gun. I think there was the motorbike, the Lawmaster. And then, of course, it ends with him picking up the badge, yeah, rubbing it on his sleeve, and in the final panel revealing what it says on the badge. I mean, what a moment for that page. Presumably, you know, the next day, it was all you were talking or thinking about, I would imagine.
Oh, yes. That definitely stuck with me for quite some time because, of course, yeah, you sitting there just going, what the hell happened? Oh, my God. And, of course, you know, 25 million hour theories running through your head. I didn't know anybody else who read 2000 AD at the time, so I didn't have anybody to talk to about it.
It was all
internalized in my head, but yes, it was, yeah.
I mean, going back about 10 years, I remember the shock of reading the Gaze into the Fist of Dredd page and, you know, talking about it the next day with people and just glorying in it. And, yeah, I wish I'd had the experience of picking this one up off the newsstands instead of reading it a year or so later in trade, because what it would have been to read that last page live, as it were. And, you know, these days Reddit would have just exploded, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. So that would have, well, I mean, Reddit would have gone nuts beforehand with theories, but it wouldn't have had the profile until that big moment of, it's just Dredd, oh, my God. But, yes, Reddit culture would have actually made the story, would have definitely been a challenge to telling the story.
So let's just finish off, because obviously the dead man leads directly into the tale of the dead man, with Dredd now knowing who he is, that what's happened to him, and that Mega City 1 is under threat again, has to turn his back on the settlements that have taken him in and head off back to the Mega City. And I think you'd mentioned, because they coloured the last page, and, of course, it sets up the next story, which is the Tale of the Dead Man, which Will Simpson coloured, I think, and drew. Is that right, Mark?
The Simpsons, it's credited to. So,
right.
I think they're thinking that's Will and his wife. Yeah,
right.
You're saying your name is Wendy?
I think that's Wendy Simpson was doing the colouring for him, yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were just talking about the colouring of the previous page, which is the first coloured page and obviously the last page of the Dead Man story. But the colouring is quite similar. So we were wondering whether Wendy Simpson might have also coloured the last page of the Dead Man to, as a nice little way of leading the two stories together, because obviously the Dead Man would have gone straight on to the Dread story. And I think they did in the prog, didn't they? They followed straight on.
It did indeed, yes.
So, yeah, another very clever little editorial twist, and I don't know whether that was John's idea or if that was Richard Burton's idea, but a great little modulation of the work to make it actually all blending together to make it one single story.
Yeah, absolutely terrific. I mean, you know, go from the Dead Man to the Tale of the Dead Man and then go into Necropolis or Countdown to Necropolis, I think, and then Necropolis itself. And to realise while that's happening, you know, that Dredd is out there in the cursed earth slowly making his way back to Megacity One. We know he picks up some, you know, assistance along the way, memorably. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we've done Necropolis on the podcast, and what an epic Carlos, you know, drawing his arm off for 26 weeks, I think.
Mm.
So, great times. And could I just mention, because, you know, like yourself, I got out the progs to look at these 13 progs that the Dead Man appeared in. At the same time as this was going on in the prog, you had part two of the Horned God, Zenith Phase 3, Song of the Surfer was there. There was Young Giant, Rogue Trooper War Machine with, again, that's Will Simpson, I think, and Judge Anderson, the Random Man. I mean, talk about the hits. You know.
There's some fantastic, I mean, fantastic little moments in there. I mean, you know, I mean, Zenith was, of course, one of those ones that was just blowing your mind, and I think Phase 3 in particular. And, of course, but, you know, I mean, hey, look, Horn God. I mean, everyone's in there just going, holy crap, what's this he done?
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And then all these other fantastic things. And, you know, Rogue Trooper War Machine, which I will admit I didn't really appreciate so much at the time. I liked it. I didn't love it. Coming back to it later, I've certainly got more appreciation for it now. But there was some just beautiful stories in there, some really, really great stuff.
That is great stuff in the prog at the time. What a glorious golden age. And to have this masterfully executed reveal, which, as I say, took all of John's, you know, thoughts about what he was going to do with Dredd for the preceding 3 or 4 years or even longer, and then Richard Burton getting the various timings of the, you know, publication. I mean, I always think the same with Matt Smith, that he is juggling all these strips. He must have complicated, you know, coloured stripes on calendars. When's this going to run? When's that going to run? But to actually, because you've got to conceal a twist in the main Judge Dredd strip until this actually happens in the Dead Man, the foreplanning that this all took is just remarkable. And we probably don't talk about the editors and the letterers enough, you know, on this podcast. But hats off to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, in my dealing with Matt, all I can say is that, you know, he's incredibly calm about it all, but he's also open to suggestions. So he's not inflexible about it as well. And I'm imagining that Richard was very much the same. And even more so with him, because he's also dealing with, you know, you're not dealing with emails anymore, you're dealing with physical delivery of artwork and you know, just dealing with artists by phone call and by them coming in and stuff like that. I mean, it would have been even more complicated in a way, as well as weirdly simpler. But, you know, I mean, full credit to them. I've got every respect for the editorial work on 2000 AD. Yeah.
Yes, a tip of the broad-brimmed Dead Man hat to all the bearers of the Sirius of Rosette over the years. Sorry, to all the bearers of the Rosette of Sirius over the years, big time.
Yes.
I'll leave that one in.
Yeah, I think you should, and no doubt you'll be blurry. I was just going to mention, we mentioned earlier about whether this is John Wagner playing around with ends to Dredd's career, and I did actually reach out and ask John
with whether this was the case or not. And, I just said, in my research, I kept coming across this rumor that you were planning on killing off Dredd or thinking about killing off Dredd and or ending the character, and whether there was any truth to this. And his response is basically, oh, first I've heard of that rumor. I had no intention of ending Dredd, though I no doubt was looking for new avenues for him.
Certainly found one.
He certainly did. Well, John was also saying that he was one who asked for John Ridgway to come in. He thought that John's work worked beautifully because of what he'd done in Summer Magic.
Yes, which was a year or so earlier, we decided, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I also asked him about whether, you know, whether it would be possible to do a story like this in 2008 these days. And then he basically says, in true John fashion, harder, but yes.
Oh, okay.
So he reckons he could. So
John reckons he could do it again. Okay, well, yes, yeah, please do, John.
I've got my suspicions about something that may have recently happened in 2000 AD. So I'll be interested to see whether that bears any fruit or whether I'm completely wrong, but we'll see. I won't elaborate further.
Okay. Well, I think I know there has been some rumour and speculation about a recent character in, or a couple of recent characters in Dredd who may have left the scene or may not have left the scene in some form. We shall see. John, as we can tell from this particular epic and Necropolis that came, he can play the long game.
Most certainly can.
So yeah. We've picked out some great moments from this story, The Dead Man. Some big reveals, some big moments, some moments of pure horror. Anything else that you wanted to add or pick out before I ask you the almost impossibly hard Grail page question?
No. I think the only thing I really, really wanted to say, and it was actually in support of the idea of John not wanting to kill this wasn't Dredd. John intended to kill off Dredd in any way, shape, or form between this, the Tale of the Dead Man, Necropolis. There's something really interesting about this story. We've talked about how it was, it's this dark, cerebral horror mixed with, deliverance and stuff like that. And it's got this magnificent set to feel of suspense and doom to it. But in a weird way, it's also an incredibly weirdly warm story. And what John did so well in the story was he centered it around a child. The child's telling the story. And there was this weird warmth to the story. And I never bought into the idea that John was thinking about killing off Dredd as a result, because for some reason I think this story really feels like John really cared to a certain degree about these characters. There's a real feeling of ownership and fondness writing about this, writing through the eyes of Yasser. And he did such a great job of talking more about how it was living in the cursed earth, which he hadn't really spent that much time getting into the minutiae and how it worked. I mean, we've seen little bits here and there within Dredd's history. And then Helltrekkers, certainly there was a decidedly grim and miserable story about what it was like being in the cursed earth and trying to get through it. But he never really talked about people who lived in the cursed earth and how they survived day to day. And it's just this little interesting little piece of storytelling, which it says a lot about John. I think I really find that he does have, for all his slightly gruff exterior that you sit there just going, oh, he's a bit intimidating and stuff like that. And, I've never actually talked to John myself. I've nearly met him a couple of times, but never actually had the guts to talk to him. But I have a sneaking suspicion that he's a very, very, very lovely, very warm man, and it really comes through in the story. So it's something that I have particular fondness for, because it says a lot about John as well as about, as well as being this magnificent
huge, huge story for Dredd.
Yeah.
Who is still one of my favourite comic characters. So, yeah, love it.
Yes, we do love it. We love John, and he is a lovely and warm chap as well. With his very dour, almost Scottish humour, obviously, but he's great. And, you know, what a masterpiece. A combination of writing, art. It's this beautifully self-contained story. It looks great. It's got all those notes, as you said, of a horror film combined with Deliverance. And it also contains possibly the biggest twist, certainly in the history of 2018, if not in, you know, British comics. It's marvellous. So what a piece of work. What an essential addition to your shelves. And I should mention, it is available in the Rebellion collection, which is a paperback, $9.99 for the hard copy, or $9.99 digitally from the 2080 online store. Or it was issue 12, the Hachette Judge Dredd Mega Collection, which rather gave the game away, I guess. But that's now out of print, although the hardbacks are still available out there on the second-hand markets. But yeah, it's an absolutely essential purchase. If you haven't got the progs immediately to hand, or you know they're up in storage or whatever, you need the Titan, or rather you need the Rebellion collection to have a look at this, because it's just glorious. And, you know, you can read it in a night, but what a story, and what highs and lows it takes you through.
Yes, it sits proudly in my bookshelf with all the other collection, the Judge Dredd complete case collections. It sits between volumes 13 and 14, sitting there, looking like an anomaly, but hey, it's there for a reason.
Go out and get it if you haven't done so already. Revel in the glories of the dead man.
Yes.
So, Mark, it's time, that time, for the Grail page game. Have you got a page or two, or any of the covers that appeared on the prog around this time, that you would like to own if you had the Fantasy Unlimited budget of Mega City Book Club to apply?
And this is where I do the deep, despairing sigh of someone who's asked to do an impossible task. Actually, it's actually not hard with this one. I mean, I think John Ridgway's artwork is so beautiful. Any page from it would be an absolute treat to have, but I don't think you can go past the big reveal moment, the two big reveal moments, really.
Yeah.
Which was obviously, you know, I am Judge Dredd, and that picture of him on the page. It's a page which I think, on its own, out of context, isn't an extraordinary page. It's beautifully drawn, but it's not one of those big whiz bang pages. But it is such an immense piece of cultural history, and particularly of this character, that I think, yeah, you couldn't say no. If that came up, yeah, you'd have to say, oh, yes, of course.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, and then the other ones, clearly, sorry, I'm being greedy. I'm pitching the three, but that's because I reckon there's actually two that really, I think, work as one piece, which is the pages of the first reveal of the Sisters of Death, because yes, they come together. Work as one, so I think you have to say that would be the other page. That's
getting greedy,
of course.
No, that's fine. I did think that they might come up as iconic moments from the history of 2008 and Judge Dredd. So those three pages we will grant you, and we will put them up in the gallery on the Facebook page and on Instagram and Twitter and on the forum, so people can see what we're talking about. But they are glorious, and they become yours in the virtual art gallery of Mega City Book Club forevermore, and, you know, sort of like iconic moments from the history of Dredd, so you can't beat it.
So are you? Come on, it's yours.
So here's something that's never happened on the podcast before, I think, Mark. I've actually got my Grail page.
Oh, you bastard.
I got an opportunity to buy a John Ridgway page, I think earlier this year or last year. So I have got, it's not one of the most memorable moments, but I have got from part 8, page 1. So this is Dredd as the dead man is hunting through the woods because the grunts have taken away Yasser and the dog. and you see the grunts at the bottom of the page. There's some skulls on sticks.
Decomposed head with one eye. Actually, that is a great page.
Yeah, and you've got Dread on there. You've got the caption, the Dead Man Part 8. You've got some speech bubbles. So I actually own that page. So I'm going to call that my Grail page and say I've got it. That's the first time it's happened. So,
well, all I'm going to say is you nutty bastard. That's awesome. That's awesome. I was actually going to say, are any of these pages out there for sale? But you just answered that question for me.
They do crop up, and I did get one about a year ago, and here it is. So, yes, I will post an image of that on the socials as well in the week or two after this episode drops, which will be next Sunday. So,
very nice.
Excellent. The Dead Man. It had to come up eventually, we knew, and here it is. Mark has done it. So, Mark, you are, of course, professional art droid yourself. It's that time of the show where we talk about guest projects. And, of course, you've also done a fair amount, in fact, quite a lot of work for big movies. If I just say Mad Max Fury Road, Black Panther, and that insect-related film you hinted at last time, which turned out to be Ant-Man and the Wasp. All marvellous, you know, huge-budget, splendid films that you've done storyboard work on, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, tell us a little bit about the process of being a storyboard artist. When do you come on board the project?
The first thing you do is you spend a lot of time in small rooms drawing, which is very much similar to being a comic book artist.
Yes.
You usually come onto a film very early in the piece. Currently I've just started work on the next Thor movie, which is going to be interesting. And that is, I think they're talking about shooting middle next year.
Right.
So just come on now. There's a first draft of the script, and which is nice. It's nice to have a script. Don't always have a script. I've just started now, and I'll be working through for about 9 months on it, which is fantastic. That's pretty much generally how it works for storyboard artists. We come on quite early in the piece, unless, of course, they've been planning really badly, in which case they get you on really bloody late and they try and get you to do everything really quickly, and that doesn't work very well.
Right.
Anyway, so this is, and in fact, I recently did a Marvel job where they had an incredibly short window of time to get some storyboards done, and that was a bit of a nightmare, but that's unusual for them. They're actually usually very organised. I won't say what that one was, but this is pretty good. And in this case, I actually have contact with the director, which is nice. Something to talk about. Not
Mr. Taika Waititi himself.
Yeah, so I don't have much contact with him because he's off doing another bloody film because he seems to be a work junkie. But I get to have occasional touch bases with him and have a chat. In fact, I'm off to Los Angeles next week to talk to him. In fact, I think when this episode drops, I will still be flying back from LA. So, I'll just look forward to all the comments abusing me for getting the episode that Fred was actually revealed to be the Dead Man wrong earlier in this episode. It's episode 10. Oops. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway.
So that's Thor Love and Thunder, which is, we should say you are Mr. Hollywood at the moment, aren't you?
It's a bit that way, yeah.
Thor Love and Thunder is scheduled, it says, for November 2021 release. Yes. So here you are doing storyboards now. Next year they'll be shooting, and then the year after it will come out. So it's quite a long process in terms of, I mean, for instance, would you ever see that sort of delay in something you'd drawn for a comic before it finally reaching the newsstands?
No, in fact, I must admit I am a repeat offender on having very polite, calm emails from Tharg himself. Through his through his editorial droid, Matt One, quietly asking me whether I might have the next pages to go to print because I kind of need it next week to go to print.
Deadlines.
Yeah, I have literally, I think the first Dread story I did, I literally got the last page in the day before it went to print. And I think the poor colorist had to move heaven and heaven on high earth to get that last page done, to which I must have been still very guilty about that, but hey.
So was that the long game story that you did with Michael Carroll back in Progs 21, 26 to 29? Would that be the one?
No. This is the one before that, which I also did with Michael Carroll, and that was the Ghosts storyline. No, I was a little bit more organised for the next Dread story, and I got that in with a little bit more time to spare. That much more time to spare, but yeah, there's a certain immediacy between getting your artwork done and then it going to print. So, yeah, I don't want to do what I did to Matt with Ghosts. In fact, I think one of the damage reports around that time is him just going, everything's late, it's all late, oh, God. And I read that and felt horribly, horribly, horribly guilty. But, yes, there's a very quick turnaround. I mean, between it going to print and it coming out, it's not long. It's a very quick turnaround, so... It's quite immediate.
Right.
So, yes. Okay.
But films take a long, long time.
Yeah.
They take years to develop and do.
Yes. Max Fury Road is a great example. 15 years. Yeah. Yes. Well, we're hearing lots of rumbles and rumors about another one of those too. And I'm kind of hoping that that might work out so that I finish on this and go on to that. But maybe. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
So there's the next Thor movie, which you're doing at the moment. There's another Marvel movie, which you can't really mention. There's the possibility of another Mad Max at some point. Yes. Anything else you can hint at or tell us about either, you know, for the prog or in the world of Hollywood?
I have done a cover for an upcoming prog.
Oh, great.
Which I think's going to be a February release? I think it's a February release. So Matt Smith, in all his wisdom, being very, very organised and trying to get it ahead of time. So, yeah, I get to do a bit of a retro look at a Cadet Dread, which is a bit of fun.
Oh, great.
Drawing the old Mark One Lawmaster. Which is the first time I think I've drawn the Mark One Lawmaster. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, it's been entertaining. But that'll come up at some point.
Okay, we look out for that in early 2020.
Yes, but as such, and not any more stories, because when you're on a film, you don't have spare time to do anything else. So
you're working on that the whole time, yeah.
Yeah, as much as I enjoy doing the film work. And as much as I am vastly relieved when I get paid for doing it, because it's the pay is stopping us from being out on the street, there's so much more pride and satisfaction in doing the comic work.
Right.
Yeah, I really love doing the comic work. I wish I could do more, but yes. Anyway, hopefully one day it'll all work out nicely and I'll be independently wealthy and I can go, yes! I'll just do stuff for 2000 AD for the rest of my life.
Yes. We'd all like that, yes. Oh, for independently wealthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll keep buying those lottery tickets.
Yeah, who knows? And I know that we've both just backed the same Kickstarter project.
Ah, yes. Rock the God. Yes.
Tell us about that, because you've spoken to John about that recently as well, haven't you?
I was bribing John to answer my terrible questions about the Dead Man by offering to buy a full run of Rock of the Reds from him, and then he did give me a nice quiet prompt that the Kickstarter up for the next series. So that was launched just a few days ago. I think it is It's had a good start, but I think it could do with a little bit more help. I think it would be nice if some lovely people out there were to go and do a little search for John's Rock the God Kickstarter, which I'm sure you'll be able to actually put a link for in the show notes.
A link in the show notes, yeah, for the Rock the God Kickstarter, the God. As you say. I mean, it has had a bit of a boost because as we speak on October the 6th, I know somebody has taken the top end sponsorship, so it has had a bit of a bump. Out for rockoftherreds.com or go to Kickstarter and look for Rock the God, or you can look for John Wagner's username on Kickstarter, which is Wagner Rock. Taking us back to Thor again, but yeah, Wagnarok.
It is.
So look out for that, because this episode will be coming out next Sunday, the 13th of October, and that will all still be running. So you
you'll have another couple of weeks to go. It's doing all right, actually. But yeah, could definitely do with a little bit more. It's about 2/5 of the way there. So if you're feeling keen, give it a bit of a boost.
Rockoftherreds.com, and it is a book. We had Rock of the Reds on the podcast with Tony Esmond. It's a great story, so we're looking forward to a bit of Rock the God.
Excellent.
And yourself, Mark, will you be back over to these shores at any time, or is it mainly Sydney to LA at the moment?
Sydney to LA. I would love to come back. I've been there twice over the past couple of years. And I've had a lovely time both times. I was over there for the 40th celebrations, which is my first time in London and in England in general. And had a lovely time. Went and visited the Cellar of Dread, and eventually got out.
Yeah.
Managed to pick the lock and get out after John had locked me in there for about 3 or 4 weeks, but managed to escape. Would love to get back there and meet a few more like-minded people and catch up with a few more of the art and writing droids and have lovely talks about shared interests. Not quite sure when that's going to be, but hopefully sometime soon. It is a significant birthday coming up next year.
Oh, right. Okay.
And significant birthdays in Australia means leaving Australia and going for a holiday, or at least I like to think they will. There may be a possibility of flying to foreign climes, and so I'll see if I can get it woven in with taking my 6-year-old to Harry Potter World, because she's obsessed with Harry Potter. And there's one in London. There you go.
There is, so, yes. Well, if you're over, we must try and arrange another pubcast and perhaps do another episode. That would be great fun.
And drink Doombar.
Drink some Doombar, as we did last time, yes. And thank you for picking The Dead Man, of course, you know, which had to come up on the podcast at some point, and now we've done it. What a marvellous book it is. Get your copy.
It is, and do yourself a favour. If you have not read it, then there's something severely wrong with you. So go out there, read it, enjoy it. It's definitely worth your time.
Genuine Art Droid Mark Sexton endorses this product.
I do. Stamp.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. Find out all the details at megacitybookclub.com. You can follow the podcast on Facebook, on the Twitter, Instagram, 2080 forums, and on Spotify. And get in touch with me by emailing mcbcpodcast@gmail.com with comments, suggestions, or if there's a book that you'd like to go on the list and do yourself at some point in the next year or so. And that's going to be it. Thanks to Mark Sexton for giving up his time in Oz. So until next time on Megacity Book Club, when we're passing judgment on another great 2080 book, it's goodbye from me and...
goodbye from the Sisters of Beef.
Bye.